You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, welcome into another edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on the Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil, and we are continuing our exit interview series. We've got a bunch of players done. We're going to do Dion Waiters today, as usual. We'll go through the pros of Dion's season, the cons of Dion's season, and then answer some key questions about his future. Let's start, David, with the pros. And I think if we're gonna pick anything for Dion Waiters, who didn't play a whole lot this year, he was coming back from that ankle surgery, only played in 44 games, took him a little bit to get into the flow, eventually got a starting job in that backcourt, and Eric Spoelstra said several times that Dion was the best three-point shooter, or maybe one of the most important three-point shooter on the team. He shot 37.7% from three, above his career average, on 6.6 attempts. I mean, he was sort of like, you think of Dion as this gunner, but he was quietly a really efficient three-point shooter for Miami.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty impressive when I was going through the numbers and looked through that, and I didn't even realize it, to be honest with you. I mean, I know he shot the majority of his shots were three-pointers, but I didn't realize it was quite as many as 6.6. So he kind of really embraced and leaned into that role as a spot-up shooter. And, you know, at 37, almost 38%, not bad. I mean, it was a pretty solid showing from him as a three-point shooter. So I'm not sure that we're ready to crown him a legitimate threat. But at the same time, that seems like it's the next phase for him. Although I wonder how much of that is a byproduct of him not being 100% and still trying to round into form. Not exactly as athletic as he once was. I don't think anybody's ever really accused Dion of being the most athletic guy on the roster, but at the same time, he was clearly out of shape, and as you pointed out, missed the first 35 games of the season. So I wonder if the three-point shooting was just, well, this is easier for me to do, or if it's just because he wasn't such a high-usage player, whether or not he was just more comfortable being out in the perimeter and taking those shots. And to be honest, nobody else was really comfortable taking those shots either. Dion, to his credit, continues to be extremely confident in that shot-making ability for himself. And so he was willing and did take the shot on more than one occasion. Again, 6.6 attempts, that's nothing to sneer at. And at the same time, converting him at a pretty high level.
Yeah, the Heat were taking more threes as a team
right. This
whole season. So I think part of that is just based on the system, Eric Spoelstra's offense that grew into this. And, you know, we think about the Miami Heat, you don't really necessarily think about them as an analytics-driven team, but Eric Spoelstra is very much analytics-driven. Mm-hmm. And he won't talk about it with the media. He likes to use Spoisms, say words like grit, loves the word grit, says stuff like that. But, this is a team that was up near the top in the league in three-point attempts per game, near the top of the league in shots at the rim per game, and near at the bottom at mid-range shots. They don't like to take mid-range shots because And quite frankly, they don't have the talent. They don't have the Kevin Durant guy. They don't have peak Dwayne Wade guy to go out there and start taking mid-range shots. So it makes sense. Like, all right, we don't have a standout offensive player, so at least let's be the most efficient version of an offense that we can. Mm-hmm. And I think Spo should get a lot of credit for that. And I think Dion Waiters should get a lot of credit for those 6.6 three-point attempts, too. 39%, almost 39% of them were catch-and-shoot threes. That's not a huge percentage. It's a decent percentage. It's not an inefficient clip. But you could even drive that up and we'll talk about what Dion's role going forward is. But there's the stroke looks good, right? I mean, there's a real base there to build on that. And if you can get more of those as catch and shoot attempts, I think you could see that percentage going up, right? Where he's not having to pull up and create his own shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that Dion Waiters, look, they trade Wayne Ellington at the trade deadline. They move Tyler Johnson at the trade deadline. Dion Waiters could be a really important part of the offense where it's not going to be so much drive and kick Dion from that 30 and 11 stretch, but maybe he is now the floor spacer for this offense.
Yeah, 60% of his shots, of all of his shot attempts, were three-pointers, so that's pretty significant there. I mean, this is clearly an evolution, even if it's over just half a season. Clearly, he's embraced that three-point shooting, so I kind of miss that aspect of his game as far as the catch and shoot. The drive and kick aspect. I feel like that'll still be there, and I wonder how much if he does return to form as far as his health is concerned, whether or not he'll feel more confident, more aggressive, and more willing to attack the basket. Something that I was going to bring up in our cons anyway is that he didn't get to the line a lot. He wasn't trying to draw as much contact as he has in the past. So I wonder if that was just, again, kind of a result of his injury. But at the same time, you know, as far as him spacing the floor and being a legitimate floor spacer, I mean, the reality is that with Dwayne Wade gone, who will be handling the bulk of the driving aspect? I mean, they're going to have to find Deion on the perimeter. So who's taking the ball inside in order to kick it out to a wide open Deion, theoretically, where he can knock down that shot? And I'm not sure that person is on that roster now that Dwayne is gone.
Deion did shoot 55% at the rim, which is pretty good. But you said that was a smaller sample size because he wasn't doing it as often. But when he was getting there, that's a pretty good average for him, especially since he's been in Miami. 55% is better than he's had, I think, in any other season, if I'm reading this correct. But I do think that he started to come along. He was obviously not in shape, but given that he wasn't in shape, I thought he was pretty effective for Miami. And maybe him not being in shape made him a little bit more deferential. And that's a good version of Deion Waiters. Like, do you worry that when he does get in shape, he's just like, look, I'm in shape now. I'm going to have the ball in my hands all the time. I mean, is that could be a significant thing.
Oh, I think that's certainly a part of it. I mean, you know, he's never been for want of confidence. And I think there was a limitation to what he could do. I mean, maybe he's not one to accept those limitations or buy into them right away. But I think, you know, clearly he wasn't in the top physical conditioning, and I think that must have impacted something to some degree. Even if it's just psychosomatic, you know, you're going to be limited in or feel like you can't do everything that you can. So, you know, I'm glad that you're bringing up his efficiency, because I think that's often overlooked. There's so much of Deion's reputation is narrative driven, and he certainly didn't help his cause by showing up to camp overweight, and obviously that was still tied into the injury. But once he did get playing time, and you know, there were some rough edges along the way there, because he did grumble about playing time publicly to the media, and you know, he wanted to start, and that's to be expected. This is Deion Waiters. This is a guy who has high expectations for himself, and again, supreme confidence. And so he wanted to be able to play. He did eventually get that starting job, but he handled it well. I think with the brief stretch in December when they were first implementing Point Justice, I think Deion in the starting lineup alongside Kelly Olynyk, you know, and Bam Adebayo, and of course Justice and Josh, that was probably the best lineup. I mean, they were winning games. They looked like they were pretty solid overall. And then, you know, the wheels kind of fell off towards the end there. But for the most part, I think when Deion was in the starting lineup, it seemed like it was the most productive and comfortable lineup. And, you know, it didn't have, obviously you can't play Dwayne and Deion at the same time because their games are far too similar. They need the ball too much, and unfortunately, I just don't think either of them at this point in their respective careers were able to produce at a high level. But, you know, alongside guys like Josh and Justice, again, guys that are more than willing to drive perhaps, and or at least find Deion along the perimeter, and he's more than willing to take the shot, it kind of worked out. So, we have questions regarding his role next season, but a lot of that has to do with whether or not there are changes to this roster. But this version of Deion this past year, pretty solid one overall.
Let's take a quick break here, and then we will do the cons from Deion Waiters' season, then get to some of those questions that you referenced. You're listening to Locked On Heat. David, you've heard of ZipRecruiter, right? We've got a ZipRecruiter ad read to do here. We've got a couple of options. There's a personal anecdote that I'm allowed to start this thing off. I'm looking at the script here that we were given, and then there's a couple of... I've never used it, so I'm not going to go with the personal anecdote, but I'm going to go with this option number two.
Okay.
Hiring is challenging. But there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applicants come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That's pretty good. That seems like a quick turnaround. And I know if you're hiring, you've got even less people on your staff, so you're probably, you need more people added sooner rather than later. So this seems like a pretty good option there. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. And now the ad read is telling me to spell locked on. I don't think our listeners are that dumb. I think they could figure it out. But it's LOCKEDON, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. David, have you ever had to hire anybody?
I have, yes. And I did not use ZipRecruiter because it wasn't available at the time. But
did it work out? Did you hire the right person?
Or did that
person's total?
No.
It did not.
It was a debacle. I wish I had ZipRecruiter.
ZipRecruiter.com, smartest way to hire. Okay, David, time to do the cons from Dion Waiters' season. I actually didn't have an easy time coming up with stuff, which is weird, because I think you and I are really, we have a unique ability to complain about Dion Waiters while also still loving Dion Waiters, But other than the injuries, right, which we talked about at the top here, he only played in 44 games. You don't really hold that against him. I mean, he's coming back from a major ankle surgery, so you can't be like, well, it would have been nice if he was healthier. Like, okay, yeah, duh. Like, okay, moving on now. But I did see that the Heat were 3.2 possessions or points per 100 possessions worse mm-hmm. when Dion was on the court versus when he was off the court. So he was a negative when he was playing. Again, obviously the injuries play into that. I think a lot of that had to do when he first returned. The Heat were pretty bad with him, and like you referenced, there was a stretch there when he was part of Miami's best lineups. So I don't think that was the case towards the end of the year, right? That's what I came up with.
Well, I as I said before, I think the free throw shooting or lack thereof, that's problematic for a guy that handles the ball. I mean, again, maybe his reduced drives to the rim probably played a significant part of it. But at the same time, nobody with his high usage as Dion's should be shooting only one attempt per game. I mean, specifically one attempt per game. And he had 44 attempts over the course of the season. Just 44 free throws for Dion Waiters. And sure, he probably thought he deserved a lot more trips, more and ones, after every shot attempt, but at the same time, he was only hitting half of those. So 50%. I know that
he stopped asking for the and ones as much. Maybe he knew that he wasn't going to shoot really well from the line. I don't know.
Don't put me on the line because I'm not going to hit them. I don't know. Right. That's possible. But to your point, as far as his on off numbers, he did not seem as capable or as engaged defensively as he had in that first shortened season that he played with Miami back in 16-17. And certainly not the kind of defense that we saw from him in Oklahoma City when they were making a deep playoff run. And I thought that was our hope, I think, when we looked ahead to what Dion's contributions would be with the Heat. We thought he would be a versatile, capable defender. And that was just not the case. I think there's still that capacity there. Like, we're seeing in the playoffs now, and not to make the same comparison, it's not apples to oranges, but we're seeing guys like Kyle Lowry, Chris Paul, guys that welcome switches when it comes to being back down into the post, and even to some extent James Harden. He's a very good post defender because of their overall strength. I think Dion is capable of those kinds of stretches. I think he's certainly strong and sturdy enough where you're not going to back him down. He's got quick enough hands. He can force a turnover there. So I think he's a capable defender in the low post. I've got to dig into those numbers. I can't recall a lot of possessions that took Dion into the post on switches. And more often than not, it seemed like he kind of just gave up on a perimeter player. You know, if he was guarding out on the perimeter and they drove past him, he kind of was looking towards help more often than not. And that's not something
If Bam is the starting center going forward and Miami adopts a more aggressive switching scheme, which we don't know if that's going to be the case, but if you've got Justice Winslow as your point guard, Josh is out there, Dion maybe is your third guy, and you've got Bam, and then fill in a forward, I guess, whether it's, you know, James Johnson, Olynyk. Olynyk wouldn't be great for switching, but James Johnson or Derrick Jones Jr. or whoever.
Yeah.
Maybe you adopt an aggressive switching scheme, and I think you're right. I think Dion is built that way where he might be a little plodding, maybe not as laterally quick to stay in front of guys like a Josh Richardson or a Justice Winslow, and he doesn't really have that long wingspan type thing going for him. But put him in the post because he's stout. He's got girth, I guess, and so he's got like that James Harden, Kyle Lowry. I think those are good comparisons as far as a body type goes.
Yeah.
I think he can hold his own there, and you'd almost welcome somebody trying to post him up as opposed to trying to take him out on the perimeter. right? And I think he might, that might be where he's best. And that kind of goes into one of our key questions here is everything starts with whether or not he's going to be in shape or not.
Yeah.
We heard in the press conferences at the end of the year, Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra told Deion, go get in shape. And they said that Deion is on the same page. He tried to play, play himself into shape when he came back from the injury. But they expect him to put a lot of work in the summer and come back and be in that shape that he was that 2015-16 season.
Can I just say something, maybe a slight aside here, but I happen to have attended the Orlando Magic exit interviews today as we're recording this on a Thursday, and obviously they just got knocked out of the playoffs by the Toronto Raptors. And similar to Media Day, it's a lot of the same vibe there where everybody's overwhelmingly positive and everything else like that. Like, I don't know how much we can take, at face value, Deion's acceptance that he wasn't in great shape. Like, obviously he's going to say that at the end of the season, but there's a whole other level there for him to actually be not just self-aware, but actually be willing to make those changes. Because one questions why he wasn't able to keep the weight off, while he was injured. Like, I understand that maybe you can't plant the same way that you normally do, or you don't have the same stability and strength. But, I mean, you can stay on a bike. You can do some exercise. You can do something to keep the weight off. You could even eat less if you had to. I mean, that's just, I don't understand why Deion put that weight on in the first place. I mean, he strikes me as a guy that likes his pleasures. You know what I'm saying? He likes to enjoy life. And that probably a big part of that is probably eating. But I question whether or not he's going to be able to kind of have that focus and realize he has to get in shape. So I wonder, we've heard that the front office is frustrated with this version of Deion. He is not the player that he was after the 2016-17 season when they thought he was going to be committed and come into this team and be part of something special and continue to grow. So I wonder whether or not he's going to be able to make that change.
And he made that big change when he was on a contract year. And I think that's the big question here is now that he's been paid, will he be motivated to make those changes and to get back into shape? And look, that's shame on the Heat's front office. Okay. Yeah. He made a huge change to his body. He had one of his best seasons ever in a contract year, but based on the rest of all of your experience, like, they bought in so much in their own culture that they thought that they had really changed Deion Waiters. And I'm not saying that they hadn't, the injury is a major thing. It basically took him out for the last 2 years, but, I don't know.
It just seemed like there was a disconnect there, you know? A player gets hurt, and I think you talked about this. I can't recall now to who it was exactly. Oh, Rodney Magruder, right? When we had Michael Pina on the show from Vice Sports, when he had that profile on Rodney and how when he got hurt, what was he doing? He was sitting behind the bench, analyzing players, taking that into consideration, looking at what was missing, what he could do differently, etc. Deion, like, fell off the face of the earth, you know? He was hurt, he had surgery, and then he was done. And then we heard rumors about him seeking a second opinion and wondering whether or not he had to get the surgery. It was just like this prolonged affair. He missed all this time, and then he just...
We didn't know any of that about Rodney until Michael wrote the piece. Like, we didn't see Rodney Magruder around when he was hurt. I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just saying we don't know what he was really doing during the offseason, and nobody's really written about it or really bothered to ask. I mean, when Rohan Nadkarni does his annual profile on Deion Waiters, maybe we'll get more information, but for now...
3 years running, right? I think that's...
it's 3 or 4 years running. All right, let's do a few more key questions. We'll do that after the break. This is Locked On Heat. All right, David, one of our final questions here. And this is the big one. Is Deion going to be the starter going forward? What is his best role? What should he play for the Heat going forward? And this is all with the cap. We could, in every single one of these exit interviews, and we probably will talk about it, but we could list as a key question here, will he even be on the roster, right? Because everybody should be on the table for a trade, depending on the value that you can get back. But nobody on this Heat roster should be untouchable.
Yeah.
Especially Deion Waiters, but given his contract situation, given the fact that he wasn't all that impressive, and given that he isn't all that healthy right now, I think I would lean towards Deion being on the roster, even if the Heat try to actively trade him. That seems maybe more as like a trade deadline type of thing, where you've got a couple of games as evidence that, oh, look, he's good, You could have him for, instead of 2 years, you'll have him for a year and a half, you know, to the team, whoever would be trading for him. And so that seems a little less of a commitment to Deion. Maybe you can get him for a playoff push, backup guard off the bench, a little bit of a scoring punch. That, to me, seems like if you were going to trade Deion, that would be when. So let's assume that he's on the roster to start the season. Should he be the starter? We know he wants to be the starter.
No, he should not. I think particularly if you're going to look at potentially trading him with that caveat in mind, as if you're going to be selling him as a potential bench scorer, a guy who can come in, energize the offense a little bit, put up some quick shots, perhaps at an efficient rate, if we continue to see this incremental growth from Deion as far as his efficiency is concerned, then why market him as a starter that could only highlight, you know, potential inefficiencies and maybe weaknesses in his game? So I think you can, I think I would make the starting lineup of Josh, Justice, Derrick Jones Jr., Olynyk, and Bam, and then have have Deion play off the bench along with Goran Dragic, where they have a comfortable pairing that works so well during that 30-11 stretch. And obviously, neither of these players are the same players they were 3 seasons ago, but I think there's a chemistry there that could probably continue to grow and function at a pretty high level. And again, if you're going to be shopping Deion around, and we assume that that's the case, and you need him to have a nice, you know, cushion of games of solid play as a backup that can come in off the bench and put up some points in a hurry, then why not have him do that, play that role in Miami, so that you can potentially focus on that and shop him around more efficiently.
And there's less of a risk, right, as opposed to showcasing him as a starter.
Yeah, like Rodney McGregor.
And there are inherent, you know, expectations that come with being a starter. If you bring us off the bench, maybe you could showcase him more in a positive light.
Absolutely.
And therefore drive his trade value up. I hadn't thought about that kind of wrinkle about it. And we've seen the Heat play guys in certain minutes, certain roles, with that in mind, right? Yeah. Like, we saw them not play Kelly Olynyk for a pretty significant stretch of the season because of his luxury tax. We saw them not play Wayne Ellington probably because they didn't want him to get hurt, and things like that. So
I think, you know, the thing with the Heat, and we keep seeing this, you know, one thing that's been highlighted with, you know, the failure to label Justice the point guard and Josh playing out of position perhaps at the three, et cetera. All these, you know, Miami seems so resistant to using labels and to putting players in specific spots. Like, you can still be a switching team and still have specific roles assigned for players with some variation. Again, I think a big part of that is having a high IQ team that can recognize when switches are necessary. And I think Miami is that team. I think, I mean, with the exception
of... Who are the high IQ players on the roster?
I think you could look at Olynyk, Justice, and Josh. Goran. I think Dwayne, by virtue of his 17 years of experience, I mean, that's certainly...
Next season.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a big part of it.
That's probably it. I think Bam's got a good feel. I think he's got a natural high IQ. I don't know that he's ready to read and react at that level yet. But okay. He could, like, the only way you get there is to play more and to do it.
Right.
But let's throw Bam in there. You kind of threw an interesting wrinkle in there with the Derrick Jones Jr. thing. I mean, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, Derrick Jones Jr., what'd you say, Kelly Olynyk and Bam?
Yeah, because whatever...
So you've got Olynyk and Josh are your floor spacers. I guess Winslow's a floor spacer now, but he's got the ball in his hands.
Yeah,
I don't know. I still don't know that that's enough ball handling. You know, because I was going to say, basically, it comes down to Goran Dragic or Deion Waiters for that third guard spot.
Yeah.
But the DJ thing, I mean, that's a really... That could be a really aggressive defensive team, but I do think ultimately it'll come down. And look, you could play Deion or Dragic in that starting unit and stagger your rotations to where you get a pretty significant portion of your bench of that second unit time with Dragic and Waiters, that 7-11 combo, playing together. You don't have to bring them both off the bench to get there.
Yeah.
I do think ultimately that's what it comes down to, because you just need another ball handler who can drive and attack, because the Heat, the way that their offense is built, I mean, it's one guy drives. If the shot's not there, he kicks out. The other person drives. If the shot's not there, kicks out. It's just drive, kick, swing. Drive, kick, swing. That's the whole thing. And I just think you need a couple of ball handles to do that. And I don't trust Derrick Jones Jr. to dribble it more than once.
I think there's room for growth there. I think, look, I mean, they've got an early offseason. I think they take a couple weeks off, and then, to be honest with you, probably within the next week or so, we'll start seeing reports of them, you know, starting to undergo whatever changes or practices or scrimmages that they're going to go through and start working on conditioning drills and getting back into it right away. They don't take much time off. And I think that's pretty standard around the league. And I think, you know, you look at guys like Pascal Siakam and, you know, Jonathan Isaac in Orlando, et cetera. These guys have that kind of Derrick Jones Jr. length. And I think there's potential for all of them to make growth. And I think Derek,
I look at Bam Adebayo as a Pascal Siakam type of guy where he can make that leap. Because he's got, I mean, what you said about all those were all lottery picks. Derrick Jones Jr. still wasn't a lottery pick.
Yeah.
Like, we could talk about how good he's been for Miami, but there is a built-in ceiling to him. And I don't think you're coming out here and saying that he could be the next Pascal, but
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I actually like the idea of having Deion and Derrick Jones Jr. start and then bring Olynyk off the bench as the backup five.
Yeah, I don't know if that's enough girth and strength to kind of pick up your bigger, you know, backcourt players or frontcourt players rather. I don't know. I think you're still lacking a little bit there. Derrick Jones Jr., I mean, 200 pounds soaking wet there. I just don't know that he's strong enough to guard guys. You know, there's so many different fours out there in the league. I mean, you could have Linus where he'd be facing Siakam or Ibaka or others like that, and I just can't see how Derrick Jones Jr. matches up with those pretty well. I mean, there's room for growth, though. The point is, like, keep him out of summer league because that's a waste of damn time. Like, help other guys that you sign, you know, pick up some guys that maybe are trying to claw their way in the league. Give them an opportunity. Derrick is established already. We saw how he went, and he blossomed last year. You spoke to him when he was having such a great summer league in Sacramento, and then he got hurt. And I think that set him back consistently. And I think then he got hurt during the course of the season as well, and that set him back a little bit. He needs to be able to just rest, build up some muscle, you know, get some conditioning in there, work on ball handling and shooting, and I think he could be an effective starter.
This turned into the Derrick Jones Jr. exit interview. I'm just like, I think we know what we're getting from Deion, though.
That's the whole thing, right? It's like, Deion has to get in shape in order for him to be a more effective player. And then once he does that, I think his best role is probably off the bench. But, you know, I could see the argument for him being a starter, too.
But there's that argument that, is it less of a headache to just start this guy because we know Goran Dragic will be fine doing whatever, right? And so that's sort of part of everything. And that's why I think we ended up talking about Derrick Jones Jr., is that if you start Deion, well, then who do you have to play around him? What is the best fit? How do you make the politics right on this roster? Because I think that was an issue in the locker room this season.
Yeah.
And if you can trade Deion, I think you do. I just think you do. And we'll see if that's a possibility. But that's it for the Deion Waiters exit interview. Thanks for listening. And remember that you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.